healthy alternatives. Both research and real-life experiences are making it clear every day that our traditional medical system and practices need to be rethought, revised, and recharged in light of a more holistic approach to health. Dr. Jerry V. Teplitz, host of Healthy Alternatives, has been a pioneer for 36 years in stress management and optimum health. With a Ph.D. in holistic health sciences, a law degree, and as the author of 8 books, all focused on health, stress management, and performance, Dr. Teplitz is uniquely qualified to help us explore and incorporate healthy alternatives into our daily lives. He is a professional speaker and has shared his wisdom with over 1 million people. Join him to reach your highest level of health and wellness. Now, here's Dr. Teplitz.
Welcome to Healthy Alternatives. My name is Dr. Jerry Teplitz, and you're listening to WebTalkRadio.net. What Healthy Alternatives is about is that most of us really want to reach optimum health, optimum wellness. We want to feel better, live longer, and enjoy life even more. That's what Healthy Alternatives is all about, bringing you options that you can use in your life. Now, every week, I like to begin the show by talking about an issue or concern you should know about because it can have a real impact on you and your life. This week, I want to talk about the early detection of cancer, especially ovarian cancer. Now, the notion of having early detection is that it saves lives. Well, in ovarian cancer, it turns out that is not true. It actually does more harm than good. In the American Society of Clinical Oncology, it was reported an 18-year study with 78,000 women, where some of the women were screened for ovarian cancers and a group was not. They both died at the same rate. What that meant is that having the test or not having the test didn't affect the death rate. Now, the two tests that we use to screen postmenopausal women are ultrasound and a blood test called CA125, and it turns out they're not very accurate and they often produce a lot of false alarms. So that you can have benign conditions, an ovarian cyst, a twisted fallopian tube, that can cause an elevation of this CA125 protein. It's now at the extent that the American Cancer Society doesn't recommend ovarian screening because these false alarms can actually be harmful. Around 3,300 healthy women in this study wound up having unnecessary surgery, and 166 developed surgical complications from having this false test being done, these false test results being done. And surgical complications can be very serious. Now, ovarian cancer is probably one of the more difficult ones for the docs to figure out because it doesn't progress in an orderly manner. It can be a very explosive onset, kind of like an earthquake when it hits, and there's no warning. So getting tested for ovarian cancer is the one test that you want to stay away from, because if you're healthy, you could become part of those 3,300 women who were healthy and had to go through surgery. So really talk to your doc about it if they want you to get surgery. Keep in mind that the American Cancer Society does not recommend it even. Today we're going to be talking about ADHD, ADD, those letters from the alphabet that for kids who have it can really have severe repercussions in their life. It could mean winding up needing to take Ritalin and other drugs. It could be difficulties in school and studying and learning. And we're going to be talking to an expert on this, a gentleman, a doctor who's written the book Managing the Gift, Alternative Approaches for Attention Deficit Disorder, because there are ways of looking at this disease and redefining it that we're going to look at and explore in this section. If you want to know more about me, you can click on the globe on this page, or you can go to teplitz.com, teplitz.com, and you can follow me on Twitter and Facebook. I also do a monthly e-newsletter. If you go to teplitz.com, click on home, you'll see you can sign up there for this free newsletter. Every week, I like to talk to you about a healthy breakthrough, something that you can bring into your life to make a real positive difference, a real healthy alternative for yourself. Well, it's mosquito time. It's bug time. So you can go out and buy bug sprays, which happen to be loaded with poisons. Do you really want to be putting that on or in your body when there are potentially much safer options? One option was approved by the Center for Disease Control. It's an oil called eucalyptus. And what it does is it offers protection levels similar to products with low concentrations of DEET in it. That's the chemical stuff. And you can find it under the name Repels Lemon Eucalyptus. There's another one that does also use these essential oils, and it mixes a bunch of them together, and it's called Go Away, and Way is W-A-Y, not A-Way, Go Away by Healing Naturals, and it combines several of these essential oils and actually smells great at the same time. A couple other options were reported in the New England Journal of Medicine as being effective. A soybean-based product called Bite Blocker was actually the most effective, and another one that was also effective was called Buzz Away. One that I really like is taking vitamin B1, 100 milligrams every 6 to 8 hours when you're going to be outside. What it does, it seems to put out an odor out of our skin that for mosquitoes just repels them away from us. There was original research that was done on this by the U.S. Army. What they did is they sent two groups out into the bush, two groups of soldiers, and one group was given kind of bug goop to put on, and the other was just given vitamin B1. Come back 2 weeks later, the group that used the bug goop, they were just covered with bites. The B1 group hardly had any bites on them, and if they had gotten a bite, it actually went away very, very quickly. A couple years ago, I went camping with some friends who have even hiked the Appalachian Trail, and they were willing to experiment with the B1, and they were surprised, end of the weekend, no bites at all. So that buzzing sound of those mosquitoes may buzz around your ear, but they don't have to stop and land on you anymore. Before I bring on my guest, I'd like to pause for this message.
Every one of us is under stress from work, family, the economy, layoffs, the inability to retire. These are the realities today. Even if you're doing okay, we all have friends and relatives experiencing hard times. Hey, just watching the news can make you nervous. Make no mistake, there's nothing benign about stress. It can lead to high blood pressure, digestive problems, difficulty concentrating, and increased risk of disease. That's why Dr. Jerry Teplitz wrote the book Managing Your Stress in Difficult Times, Succeeding in Times of Change. He presents easy, effective techniques to reduce stress, eliminate pain, relieve insomnia, and gain an overall sense of well-being. Managing Your Stress is fully illustrated and provides hands-on, proven methods you can use immediately. Dr. Teplitz knows how to cut to the chase. He begins working with you from the very first page of Managing Your Stress in Difficult Times, Succeeding in Times of Change. Click on the cover that you see on the WebTalkRadio.net page in front of you and buy it now. It comes with a 60-day money-back guarantee, and it will change your life.
My guest today is Dr. Kevin Ross Emery, and over the last 30 years, Dr. Kevin has been an early innovator in both the business and the private sectors. In the late 70s and 80s, he was implementing formalized training systems in many different industries. He started changing directions in the early 90s. He became one of the first to introduce the concept of coaching into his practice and then seamlessly integrating coaching and counseling in a single process. He's studied both Eastern and Western philosophies. He has his PhD is in divinity, and his groundbreaking award-winning book, Managing the Gift, Alternative
approaches for attentions deficit disorder. And we're going to be looking at this whole notion of ADD, ADHD, all the different letters, and we're going to be looking at it as an evolutionary process and not a disability. So, Dr. Kevin, welcome to Healthy Alternatives.
Well, thank you for having me, Jerry. I'm glad to be here.
So where did ADD, ADHD come from? And you better define what those letters mean so people who don't really know it, they can understand what we're talking about.
ADD, ADHD, from my perspective, actually is an evolutionary process. The letters themselves is attention deficit disorder or attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. It originally started as an ADD definition. It went from ADD to ADHD. Now the ADD actually is not used. It's become a subheading from ADHD with the subheading of ADD, partially because people were starting to balk at why we were medicating children with ADD if they didn't have the hyperactivity. So now you can actually have a child that gets labeled ADHD non-hyperactive so that they can still justify writing a prescription, giving them a drug for it. And so they actually changed it and restructured it because people were challenging it. If they're just ADD, why are we medicating them? And so that's been a little bit of that history. As an evolutionary process, we look at it that it started to come back. It came in the 1850s, and it gave birth to what I call the architects of the 20th century, Alexander Graham Bell, Einstein, Edison, Ford. They give us telephone, telegraph. They gave us computers, TVs. People say, did computers create ADD? Did television, did video games create ADD? It's like, no. These things were created by the ADHD brain that needed to have more challenges than society was offering them.
So you're saying all those gentlemen were, in effect, ADHD, and they were some of the most creative folks that ever were born on the planet.
Well, and if you look at, you look back, because of course they didn't have that kind of definition, but if you look back at biographies or autobiographies or descriptions of these people, by the way that they're described or the issues they had today, because ADHD is an observationally diagnosed disability. They diagnose it just from observational. They keep on trying to throw in this whole smoke screen about brain scans and stuff. If you look real deep, they're really pulling our leg on a lot of stuff around that. But because right now it is still, this is how it looks to us, so therefore it must be. One of my pet examples is Alexander Graham Bell was considered the village idiot and left school when he was 16. And if we had been able to medicate him, then we would still be talking on two tin cans and a piece of string.
Yeah, but at least he would have graduated from school.
Yeah, I know. Hey.
What's the most important part of that? Yeah. So how prevalent is it at this point, ADHD?
Well, the numbers have been going up sometimes in double digits year after year. We're talking about 5.4 million is the last statistic I saw, kids that have been diagnosed with it. That number is going up steadily. And the percentage, it used to be that when I first got into the field, which was over 10 years ago, 10, 11 years ago, 3 to 5% of kids were being medicated. Now it's now the numbers are much, much higher. So we're talking that there's been a real push for the medication and for the diagnosis to happen. Now, from the perspective of it being evolutionary, it would make sense that more and more of these kids are coming in, except for the fact that I'm not seeing it as a disability. I'm just seeing it as a natural process that, we don't look the same way that they looked 200 years ago. We have adjusted. Evolution adjusts the environment and adjusts to the environment, and it does both processes before it's done. And these kids have been coming in for 150, 160 years, and they have totally been changing the environment to suit their needs. And then that environment helps other people to be more like them. which is why we have so many multitaskers today. And there's a pet joke, you know, oh, you must have ADD. Oh, you must have ADD. Because we're almost forced to live in a world where multitasking is necessary in order to survive, and multitasking is an ADD trait.
Now, some of the research, though, on multitasking has been saying that people are, and kids are not as, they think they're more efficient, but they're not. How does that play against what you're talking about with them being able to be more effective when they're coming from an ADHD kind of background?
Well, the interesting thing is, and I've read some of those statistics, Jerry, you know, that, or some of that things that, you know, multitasking is really not good for most people. About 10% of people actually are more efficient when they're multitasking. That was the last figure I saw.
Okay.
Not everybody. It's the majority of people do not multitask well. The majority of people do not have ADD. And what I would give back to you is the concept of the ADDs are the ones who are doing it well. We have all sorts of other people that are trying to do it and are not built to do it. And there is also a myth, because ADD, attention deficit disorder, says these kids cannot focus. And that is not true. They have two settings. They hyperfocus or they multitask. And when they multitask, it's a sign of boredom, which is different than multitasking, because you feel so pressured that you have to do 10 things at once because you can't get everything done. I actually have a blog coming out later this week called You Gotta Love Drive-Thru, and the evolution of how we have turned our world into a drive-thru world. And that forces people to have to multitask to survive.
Their concentration is based on them not being bored. Then they can concentrate, and they'll concentrate extremely intensely, is what you're saying.
And yeah. When you get an ADD, ADHD child or adult that are truly interested by something, when they're captivated by something, and they want to learn it, because here is another myth that, you know, ADHD kids don't like learning. They love to learn. They don't like the limitations of the current public education system, which is failing all children these days, but this particular group more than most. But they don't like the way that we give them the information, but they love to learn. And so when these kids find something that they want to learn, they actually go into a hyper-focus mode where they'll go from I'm curious to I'm interested to you got me hooked to I could do a doctoral thesis on this subject. Oh, here, we've been doing it this way for 2,000 years. Here's a better way to do it. And they're probably right.
So in your book, you refer to a concept of CIS. Can you explain that to our listeners?
Absolutely. CIS stands for Cultural Inconvenience Syndrome. And that's why we medicate these kids, because they're culturally inconvenient. They don't play by the rules. And if we were really honest, we would say that a lot of these kids get medicated so they can be easier, more easily managed in the classroom, and they are less challenging and trying at home, because they need to be constantly challenged. They need to be, somebody has to step up to the plate and to engage them, to engage all of this creativity, to engage all this brilliance, to engage all of this curiosity, to keep them going. And when they get bored, they get in trouble because they're looking for something to do. They're looking for something to engage them. And so they became culturally inconvenient to us. Now, here's a little thing I want you to keep in mind, Jerry. You know, you heard of the gifted children's programs?
Mm-hmm. Oh, sure.
There was a criteria in the 70s for gifted children's programs that these 10 criteria that they handed out and said, if you have a child that's acting this way in your classroom, or your child is acting this way according to the teacher, they may be a gifted child, and we're creating these programs for smaller, you know, for smaller groups of kids with the best teachers, because these kids are gifted. There was a list of 10 criteria. 5-6 years later, a list of criteria came out about how to identify an ADD child, and the list was identical. I actually have a presentation, I show it. Word for word, it's identical. The thing is, there was no way to make money off gifted children, but there was a way to make a ton of money to be made off disabled children.
So, in effect, you're saying it's the drug companies that have been behind the moving into the changing of the list, for example.
Oh, they're having their hands in it. Public education has their hands in it as well. because it shows all the ways that public education is no longer serving children. It challenges them. And then you have generations of parents who, you know, the last couple of generations of parents, many of them only had a single parent themselves, or they were latchkey kids. They came from broken homes. They were not, they moved around more. They weren't as much a part of a community. There was not that support. We didn't have the, you know, two or three generations living in the same house or in the same neighborhood. We lost all of that. And so today's parents oftentimes give their power away to the authority figures, the teachers, the doctors, because they're at a loss. They don't know what to do, and they don't have good parenting skills. They don't have them because they didn't experience them because of the revolution that we went through in the 60s and 70s, which, you know, the family unit has never been the same.
So before we continue, I'd like to remind you, you're listening to Healthy Alternatives with Dr. Jerry Teplitz on webtalkradio.net. And we'll be back with my guest, Dr. Kevin Ross Emery, in just a moment and continue talking about the stuff in his book, Managing the Gift, Alternative Approaches for Attention Deficit Disorder. Be back in a second.
Improve your golf game today. It's absolutely possible using the DVD Par and Beyond, Secrets to Better Golf, from stress management coach Dr. Jerry Teplitz. Par and Beyond is a revolutionary new concept that yields immediate results. You'll experience the difference the very next time you play. Even the golf pros love this method. Randy Taylor hadn't placed in a tournament for 8 years, but just 1 week after taking this seminar, he came in second. It's not just in your swing, it's in your head. That's why T&I Golf Magazine calls Dr. Teplitz a headmaster. Par and Beyond, Secrets to Better Golf is available on DVD. You can get it by clicking on the Par and Beyond cover on the WebTalkRadio.net screen in front of you. You'll learn new, powerful techniques that will instantly improve your game, whether you're a pro or a duffer. This is your new secret to success on the course. It's a totally different approach, and it comes with a 60-day money-back guarantee. And don't tell your golf buddies. You're about to become a winner.
So my guest today is Dr. Kevin Ross Emery. Over the last 30 years, Dr. Kevin, he's been an early innovator in both the business and private sectors. He was involved in the 70s and 80s with implementing formalized training systems in many different industries. In the 90s, he was one of the first to introduce the concept of coaching into his practice and then integrating coaching and counseling. He studied both Eastern and Western philosophies. He's a doctor of divinity. And his latest book is Managing the Gift, Alternative Approaches for Attention Deficit Disorder. And his latest one, that the newest one coming out in August, is going to be Managing the Gift of Your ADHD Child. So let's actually talk about that. How do you manage this gift with this child?
Well, it's interesting because one of the things is that we have taken these children and adults and we have convinced them and convinced ourselves we need to medicate them. And for a long time, nobody was even using the word gift associated with them at all. You know, I was the first one because the first book came out in, you know, over 10 years ago now that said that this is a gift. And what we're looking at is that these natural gifts of those that theirs can end up being issues because there are certain things that exacerbate what are positive qualities and make them negative qualities. So in this book, Managing the Gift of Your ADHD Child, we're actually looking at, you know, these are the things that exacerbate the ADHD, such as diet, environment, certain kinds of structure, how to identify what are the things that work best with your individual child. In fact, in it is going to be something that parents can do as a checklist to understand what are the things I need to go in and ask the school to provide for my child, because it's the parent's responsibility to know that. They can't count on the fact that it's going to pass from grade to grade accurately of what is their child's needs. They're the parents. They need to know, what are my child's educational needs? And so I actually give them something to go over in the book to ascertain what kind of learning. How does my child need to be taught? How is they going to best get in the information? So there are ways to manage the gift through structure, through diet, through making shifts in environment, how you present things to them, using more of a interactive dialogue, because monologue is never a good way to teach. It's a good way to lecture. But with these kids, monologues don't work. There has to be dialogue if you want to keep them engaged.
Are you familiar with the effect of lighting on these kids? Have you run across that in your research?
Absolutely. One of the things is that we look at these kids, and some of them, depending on what kind. In the first book, I actually break it up into different kinds of ADHD by how it goes through the body. That some of them have troubles with, like, handwriting, where other of the ADHD community has no problem with handwriting. Some have problem with reading. Others have no. Well, why? Because the energy goes actually through their body in a different way. They have a different pattern and an energy flow, and one of the energy flows makes it hard to hold a pencil and write, another one doesn't. And so starting to, again, identify that this isn't just a one-stop shop thing, this process. It is an evolutionary process, and it affects different children differently, and there are different kinds of ADHD, for lack of a better word. And that, so by understanding that, we put different things in place. Not all ADHD kids are going to be as bothered by the lights, back to your question, mm-hmm. as others. But fluorescent lights have a certain pulse pattern to them. Mm-hmm. If it is in disharmony with the pulse pattern that's going on with the ADHD child, it will actually irritate them and it will distract them. So they may even be interested in the information, but if it's being presented in a room with fluorescent lights, the lights are constantly, it's almost like having a little buzz, a little fly at your head.
And you let me share with you some of the research that I've done that I think you might mm-hmm. find interesting. There was a charter school in Florida, Maitland, Florida, called Summit Charter School. It's for all ADHD, ADD, all the letters of the alphabet kids. And they were under cool white fluorescent tubes, which is actually the type of tube you're talking about now in terms of buzz and how the kids respond. And they kept records for 6 weeks, the teachers did, on attention, behavior, concentration, all those different variables. And then they swapped the tubes out to what is known as a full spectrum fluorescent tube that simulates the wavelength of sunlight. And they kept records for another 6 weeks. And what they discovered is it blew their mind, the level of change in those kids on all those variables of attention, behavior, concentration, to the extent they were going to pull the tubes, the full spectrum tubes, out of one of the teacher's classrooms, put into another classroom to continue researching, and put her cool white tubes back in. At the end of her glowing letter, she wrote, "If you attempt to take these out of my classroom, I will fight you and I will change the locks on my door."
Good for her.
That's conviction of a change. As a matter of fact, one of the things she said is when the kids left her classroom to go into the cafeteria, which were still those cool white fluorescent tubes, they'd come back into the full spectrum classroom. It took her an hour to settle the kids down again and get them focused. If they went out to play during recess in sunlight and she brought them back into the classroom, there was no transition at all.
And see, and these are the kind of things, and one of the things that happens, Jerry, and with your background doing what you do, I'm sure that you may have had frustrations as well with this, is traditional thinking is, traditional Western medicine thinking is always looking to take pot shots at things that either they don't understand or they can't have their fingers in, they have no control over. And so what happens is people do things like, for years, diet is one thing you can do. Lighting is one thing you can do. The chemicals are another thing that can cause a lot of problems. The smells in the air can cause a lot of problems. There are things we can do and work with. But it's like you have to have this, the whole definition of holistic is whole. You have to look at the whole thing and you have to put a whole protocol in. And when you put a whole protocol in, this child and this adult can really fly with no side effects, with no limitations, with no what I call drug them up and dumb them down side effects that happens with medication. But what happens is they try one thing. Oh, well, I tried some supplements that didn't help. Well, what else did you do? Well, I changed the lights. did you change the lights and the supplements and put the organizational pattern in? Did you do everything? Or did you do one thing? It didn't work. You stopped doing it. You tried something else. You did one thing. It's like a doctor telling you, here is, a series of medications I need to for you to take in order to help you. And you pick and choose which ones you want to take. And then you blame the doctor for not getting help.
Well, actually, the flip side is now they have, like with AIDS patients, they give them a cocktail of things because one is not enough. And so that, in effect, applies one alternative approach may not be enough, but you have to look at the bigger picture, like exactly like you're saying.
Yeah. And you get these things. I mean, I just did a blog on it the other day called I Can Go Home Now. And if you have never seen anything that dripped in sarcasm, you need to read it.
Well, wait a minute. You can't go home until we finish the interview, fella.
they'll say, well, now there's evidence that maybe diet might have a little bit of an effect, and we're supporting this as long as you always remember to medicate. I mean, it's almost laughable if it wasn't so sad.
One of the other areas that I also focus in, I don't know if you're familiar with it, is an area called Brain Gym.
I love Brain Gym.
Yep, and I've been involved with that for years. I'm one of the few that applies it in the business arena. And one of the books I just wrote is Switched on Selling, Balance Your Brain for Sales Success, applying it there. Why don't you tell listeners a little bit about what you know from Brain Gym from your side of the equation?
Well, that from my side, that some of the Brain Gym exercises, which is something that I have had other people that have worked with my kids do with them, because I've never been like trained in the process. I know that the balancing from the left, to me, I call it the balancing from the left to the right, and getting it so that they can be going in and be actually going back and forth without interruption from both sides.
Mm-hmm.
And so I know that there are some exercises, I'm familiar with some of the exercises they do, which actually takes when there is something that isn't getting communicated from one side of the brain to the other clearly, and these exercises cross over those neuropathways so things function. Like I said, I've not been trained in it. I love it from the perspective of I have had people that have worked with my kids doing it, and I can see the results of it. But I can't say I've applied it. I don't have your level of knowledge on it.
Great. Yeah. And my experience has been it's one of the key elements to add, but it's not the only one like we're talking about. Use a diversity of approaches. So for those who want to find out more about what Dr. Kevin is doing, you can simply go to his website of My Dr. Kevin, and doctor is DR, not a doctor spelled out. So mydrkevin.com. And you can learn more about what he's doing, and his book that's out now is Managing the Gift, Alternative Approaches for Attention Deficit Disorder. And his latest one coming out in August is going to be Managing the Gift of Your ADHD Child. Dr. Kevin, thanks for being a guest on Healthy Alternatives.
Jerry, thanks for having me.
My guest next week is Dr. Peter Lathrop. Dr. Lathrop is a clinical neurophysiologist. He actually helps people suffering from acute chronic pain that's related to soft tissues that have been damaged, musculoskeletal injuries. He helps them very quickly get rid of their pain and accelerate the healing process by using microcurrent bioelectric signaling devices. So he's using a form of electricity to do this healing work. It's a fascinating story. He's actually one of the original inventors of the TENS unit, which is used to get rid of pain, lower back pain, by sending this signal into it. You're not going to want to miss this one. This is Dr. Jerry Teplitz, and you can find out more about me at teplitz.com or follow me on Facebook and Twitter. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for being with us today for Healthy Alternatives. For more information about Dr. Teplitz and his availability for speaking engagements, please click on the globe on the webtalkradio.net page in front of you or go to teplitz.com. You may also follow him on Facebook and Twitter by using the icons on the page. To find out more about his books, please click on any of the book covers you see. Eat well, rest well, take a breath, get some exercise, and we'll see you again right here next week for another edition of Healthy Alternatives.